First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
The COVID vaccine doesn't affect your fertility. So why do so many women think it might? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, dispelling a very persistent piece of vaccine disinformation, the COVID jab and your ability to get pregnant. Women, give us a call now, and men too, 549-2937. Then later, the value public art can bring to a city as one controversial piece of public art is planned for the North Bank. But first this hour, misinformation about the COVID-19 vaccine is appearing almost everywhere, from your uncle's Facebook post to a well-trusted news personality. Where is all this coming from, though, and why are some myths spreading faster and further than others? Here's one particularly persistent lie about the vaccine, that it can affect female fertility. Doctors, the CDC, every credible source on this matter wants you to know, for the record, that is not true. We've been hearing so much about this from women in the area and also parents of girls that we really felt it was important today to focus on it at length. So we're pleased to welcome an expert to debunk this myth. Dr. Catherine Villano is a maternal and fetal medicine specialist at Baptist Health here in Jacksonville, and she's on the line. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing?
I'm well, and thanks so much for being with us. And everybody, give us a call as we talk about this persistent myth that the COVID vaccine can affect your ability to have a child. Doctors who specialize in this want you to know that it will not harm your ability to get pregnant. So call us up right now if you have questions and concerns about this. 549-2937, emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or weigh in on our Facebook page. Straight off the bat, Dr. Villano, please tell our listeners first off, can the COVID vaccine impact your fertility?
Well, that is a question I'm getting quite a bit these days, Melissa, as you mentioned. And while obviously we're still collecting data, studies are ongoing, there's no data that the COVID-19 vaccine can cause infertility, and really there's no credible scientific theory for how it could cause female infertility. It's a myth that was started in social media, and it was based on a theory that some shared amino acids between the spike protein that the vaccine targets and a protein that's present in placenta tissue share about a 4 or 5 amino acid sequence. So there was a theory that maybe somehow the vaccine could cause a reaction against this placental protein called syncytin 1. However, the amount of amino acid that's shared is minuscule. If we look at the spike protein, it's about 1,273 amino acids long. The placental protein, syncytin 1, is about 538 amino acids long, and we're talking about 5 of those amino acids. So scientifically, it doesn't make sense that 2 completely different structural proteins would have a cross reaction with this vaccine.
It's 549-2937 to join us. A lot of this has spread on Facebook groups. They take a lot of the blame for this false information, Dr. Villano. And there's a kernel of truth which has caused this myth to spread, isn't there? Because some women did report having abnormally heavy cycles after getting the vaccine. But that is, you can't make the leap from that to concluding that you can't get pregnant after getting the vaccine.
Correct. There are some anecdotal reports and some reports coming in through the VSafe app, et cetera, that we're using to monitor reactions to the vaccine of a heavy period or spotting between periods in the cycle after the vaccine is given. We're not 100% sure why that is. There's lots of reasons for heavier periods, including stress, weight, lifestyle changes. All of those things have, you know, changed tremendously with COVID in the last year or so. We know stress increases your cortisol level. Cortisol levels change period cycles, and we can see changes in menstruation related to that. We also know that the vaccine does activate your immune system. The vaccine is designed to help your immune system create antibodies, and there is some inflammatory response related to that. That's why you get sore. That's why you might have some aches and pains or some chills or low-grade fever for 12 to 24 hours following the second dose. Any type of inflammation in the body can affect your period as well. So we don't think there's a direct correlation. We don't think the vaccine is acting directly on the endometrium, the part of the uterine lining that is shed with your period. But, you know, it's certainly something we'll keep our eye on. However, all of the reports about a heavier cycle the month following the vaccine, they demonstrate that the cycles go back to normal the following month. So it does not seem to be a persistent problem. It's one of those, you know, what I would consider a mild side effect in the category of things that we can expect to see in a woman who's had a vaccine.
Thanks to the person who tweeted me this link, a recent study in the American Society for Reproductive Medicine Journal found that there is no effect of the COVID vaccine on female fertility. Reports claiming that the vaccine causes female sterility are unfounded. The study concluded there was no difference between the control group and the other group in ability to get pregnant. Without going into all of the scientific jargon, that's the takeaway. The study is critical because vaccine hesitancy in women of childbearing age is concerning, and it has resulted from the spread of misinformation on social media, incorrectly stating that COVID vaccines cause sterility in women. This study documented for the first time in women that seropositivity to the SARS spike protein does not prevent embryo implantation or early pregnancy development. So, you know, so the big hysteria, Dr. Villano, is about women and their ability to have babies. You're a maternal and fetal medicine specialist. There have been rumors about male fertility too, but here's the deal. People who have COVID and long COVID, especially, particularly in men, that impacts their reproductive health negatively. If you have the disease, that is actually the truth, that if you do get sick with COVID, you are hampered in your ability to sire a child. So
that's correct.
Yeah.
Melissa, there's a recent study out of the University of Missouri looking at specifically what happens to men after COVID-19 infection, and they've documented a decrease in sperm count, decrease in testicular function, decrease in male fertility, which certainly the more severe the infection, the more severe those effects. And to your point, you know, we're still going to be evaluating the effect on, you know, fertility of the actual COVID infection. We know that those women who do get severe infections and are hospitalized have a tremendous disruption in their menstruation from the stress response on the body responding to the infection itself. So, you know, if pregnancy is an immediate goal and that's a concern, it's even more important to prevent infection, you know, either leading up to, which might disrupt your cycles and make it more difficult to conceive, or, you know, during pregnancy, which has its own risks.
It's 549-2937. As we debunk vaccine myths on the show today with Dr. Catherine Villano, maternal and fetal medicine specialist at Baptist Health. Pregnant women, breastfeeding women, they are also recommended to get the vaccine as well, correct?
That is correct. The way this vaccine works, the mRNA molecule cannot cross the placenta, and it does not cross the breast milk barrier. It's too big a molecule to do so. So when we, you know, inject the vaccine into a mom who's pregnant or breastfeeding, it does stimulate her immune system to develop antibodies against the spike protein, but it does not cross the placenta and affect the baby directly, nor does it cross the breast milk directly. That's nice because you can be reassured that the immune response and those side effects that mom may be feeling are not going to be happening on baby's end. The other interesting fact is that when we look at side effects for pregnant women who are vaccinated, they seem to be fewer and less. Doesn't mean zero, but, you know, the day after the second dose is well known to be, you know, a day where you might feel a little bit of fatigue, you might feel, you know, a little tired, may have some aches, pains, chills, headache, low-grade fever, that type of thing. That response is not going to be happening in the fetus. But what does happen, and a major benefit, is that the antibodies mom creates can cross the placenta and protect the baby, both in the womb and after delivery. Those antibodies stick around for a good while in baby's system. So it has, you know, quite a bit of benefit. The other main concern is that we know our pregnant women who are getting sick with COVID, particularly the new Delta variant, are much more susceptible to the severe complications that come with that infection. We're seeing more pregnant women than their healthy peers get admitted with pneumonia, have oxygen requirements, and really get severe COVID symptoms, life-threatening, while pregnant compared to women who are equally healthy and are not pregnant. And that just has to do with normal physiology of pregnancy. We change the way we breathe when we're pregnant. Our immune system changes the way it responds when we're pregnant. It's trying to protect mom and baby. It may have a more vigorous response. So for all of those reasons, myself, my colleagues, both in maternal fetal medicine, which is the fancy word for high-risk OB, as well as general OBGYNs, all of our medical colleges are strongly encouraging pregnant women to consider being vaccinated to protect themselves.
549-2937 as we talk about vaccination myths. Dr. Villano, how do we talk to women about this? Because many women are saying they will skip the shot because they are afraid it might someday affect their ability to get pregnant. That some parents are saying, I won't let my teenage daughter get the shot just in case it affects her ability to someday have a child. Here is a tweet from Taryn. I have a nurse friend at Baptist who won't get vaccinated for this reason. Is Baptist making sure staff is getting proper training and info? So even nurses and healthcare workers, your colleagues, are buying into this. They're skipping the vaccine because they think it might make them sterile.
I know. And that's, you know, we are trying to get the word out. We've been doing information sessions to reassure women, particularly who are interested in fertility, that we don't have any evidence, we don't have any credible data that this would affect fertility and their ability to conceive later on down the line. So certainly that is a concern amongst lots of women. You know, the anti-vaccine movement was alive and well long before COVID-19 vaccines came along. It's a big community. It's thriving online. It's thriving in social media. There's about 31 million people following anti-vaccine groups on Facebook. So it's hard even for medical personnel to take a look at what's out there in the general media and decide what's a reliable source and what's not. So, you know, it's hard when you're trying to look at data and make decisions. We're trying to be available to answer questions, to explain how the vaccine works, to explain what we know it does and what we know it doesn't do. You know, unfortunately, there was a social media campaign about this placental protein theory that just doesn't make any scientific sense. The two proteins are completely different. It'd be like saying, I know one digit of your phone number so I can call you, or I'm going to confuse an elephant with a mouse because they're both gray. There's so much difference in the two proteins. Your immune system just does not work that way and is not going to cross-react. So, you know, it's difficult to combat misinformation that's purposefully put in the media, particularly social media, where a lot of people are going to get information.
That's the problem. So much of this is people reading something on Facebook by someone who is a self-styled expert who isn't. They have a large social media following, but they're not a doctor or a data scientist or an epidemiologist. And so, you know, I don't know how many more times we have to say this to folks. Please stop getting your medical information from Facebook or someone that you saw something on Facebook. One of the people that has spread this misinformation far and wide is an anti-vaccine campaigner named Naomi Wolf. She's not a medical doctor, but she's been tweeting links about this out on a popular Facebook group. She uses an old trick, saying something needs more investigation, raising doubts about the safety and efficacy of the vaccine without presenting any facts that can be refuted. And she's also been putting out the myth that somehow vaccinated women can pass side effects on to the unvaccinated. This is tied into the myth that women who live together sync up each other's monthly cycles. So, you know, it's just so difficult to combat this stuff, which is why we're so glad to have you on the show today, Doctor. And, you know, I'm almost to the point of despair, frankly, in trying to talk to people about these vaccine myths, particularly about fertility and reproduction, because this gets at deep-seated subconscious anxiety that societies have about female fertility. I think that's why this one has become such a tough lie to combat. This sort of collective panic about women's fertility. There's a lot going on psychologically with people around this. And so as a doctor who specializes in maternal and fetal health, how do you see that?
Well, I would definitely agree. You know, it's a topic that's always hard to deal with. And, you know, we know a lot of women struggle with fertility. So it's a natural fear and a natural concern and a good question to ask. You know, my advice is to really reach out to your medical provider and have a discussion, have a, you know, a list of the pros and cons. The benefits to vaccination are increasing as we get further along in this pandemic. You know, originally a lot of people said, well, you know, I'm not going to vaccinate my kids because if they get it, it's going to be mild. But we're seeing new variants all the time, and we're particularly the Delta variant, which is very prevalent here in Jacksonville, is not paying as much attention to your age or your health status as the original COVID virus outbreak was. I mean, yes, we knew the original virus was affecting older and infirm people much more so than the young and healthy. This new variant is predominantly affecting younger people who are unvaccinated. 98% of our hospitalized patients right now are unvaccinated, and 45% of them are under the age of 40. That's about half. Mm-hmm. So there isn't an age prevalence anymore. We are seeing more pediatric admissions to the hospital for severe COVID. So the longer we delay in getting ourselves and our kids vaccinated, the more opportunity we are to see more virulent forms of the virus that may affect, you know, our younger population, our healthier mm-hmm. population more severely.
Have you had, go ahead. Have you had women who've been vaccinated go on to get pregnant and deliver babies at your hospital?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that, because maybe those types of real world stories, you know, they might do more than a scientific study to convince people, sadly.
Well, certainly, you know, and I will say, I think my reproductive endocrinology colleagues, those are the docs that specialize in fertility, they've done a great job, you know, reassuring their patients and encouraging them to get vaccinated even prior to pregnancy. So I do have a large number of patients who are undergoing fertility treatment, you know, prior to COVID, get vaccinated and successfully conceive. If you look at the data that we're seeing on patients who are infected with COVID and patients who are vaccinated, there appears to be no decrease in fertility. Their pregnancy rates are the same, whether they didn't get COVID, whether they got COVID, or whether they got vaccinated against COVID. So, you know, there's no good data that fertility in women is decreased. There is some data on decreasing fertility in men after the actual infection. And we've got a number of patients who have been vaccinated during pregnancy. They talk to their OBGYN or they talk to their high-risk physician if they have risk factors about the risks and benefits, have chosen to get vaccinated, doing very well. You know, we haven't seen a single adverse outcome out of being vaccinated, either prior to or during pregnancy.
Thank you so much for that. And thank you for joining us. Dr. Catherine Villano, a maternal and fetal medicine specialist at Baptist Health Jacksonville. Thank you, doctor.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Melissa.
Okay. And let me make mention of two other stories we're following today. The Duval County School Board meets tonight at 6 o'clock. Before that meeting, there will be a large rally outside the school board offices on the South Bank of parents, educators, and activists calling for Duval schools to implement a mask mandate next week for all students. Superintendent Diana Green has already put in a 30-day mask mandate for all adults on school campuses, but she says she is unable to also mask up the children because Governor Ron DeSantis has signed an order banning school districts from implementing mask mandates this school year. This despite the fact that we are the national epicenter of the Delta variant spread of the coronavirus, and our hospitals are strained to the seams right now dealing with patients, including children. We lead the nation now in hospitalized children with COVID. So that's happening tonight. We will speak with Superintendent Dr. Diana Green about this on tomorrow's show. At the same time, there are petitions online, both in Duval and St. John's County, as parents are urging people to sign them, calling for masks in schools. We'll follow that as well. Much more still ahead later in the hour, how Elevate Jax is working in two local high schools as classes get underway. But up next.
A lot of their stress manifests itself into things like perfectionism, high sensitivity, social problems, and high pressure.
Helping high-performing kids under even more stress in this pandemic. We'll be right back.
How can the local news media serve you better? Hi, this is WJCT Editorial Director Jessica Palumbo. And we want to hear what topics interest you, when you'd like to read about them, and how you might want to lend your voice to the stories that your neighbors read. Help us shape the newsletter that we are creating for you. Take our quick survey now at wjct.org/survey. And thanks.
The Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT Public Media is your ticket to the local scene. Music reviews, curated playlists, music history, concert recommendations, profiles of local artists, and more. Turn your ear on the beautiful noise emerging from Northeast Florida and learn more about the local artist whose music is reverberating across the country. Visit jacksmusic.org to play it local and play it loud.
Welcome back. It is a new 9-week program helping gifted and creative students in Jacksonville balance school, life, stress, and self-care. Particularly important right now. Licensed mental health counselor Erica Whitfield is the creator of Balanced Intensity. I spoke with her. Hey, Erica, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa. It's awesome to be able to speak with you today.
So tell us about this program. This is of interest to a lot of parents right now because they've got talented kids, but they're stressed about school, the pandemic. This is called Balanced Intensity. How does it work?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for sharing that concern. Yes, so my name is Erica Whitfield. I'm a licensed mental health counselor and owner of Positive Development LLC, a counseling practice for gifted and creative children and adolescents. And like you were saying, our new program, Balanced Intensity, is a 9-week online coaching program that really helps our gifted and creative kids with some of the major struggles that we see them come in to our office with. So a lot of their stress manifests itself into things like perfectionism, high sensitivity, social problems, and high pressure. They have a lot of individuals, teachers, parents, even peers, that put pressure on them, and they also put a lot of pressure on themselves. And so our group is all about talking about that and learning tips and techniques to manage that to decrease their anxiety and depression if those things go unchecked.
You know, I've seen this at close range with my own kids and my friends' kids.
Sure.
Kids are under so much stress. They are full of anxiety right now. Kids are self-harming. The last year and a half has been just terrible for them. What are some ways that you help children develop better coping strategies for all the pressure that they're under?
Absolutely. And, you know, interestingly enough, social interaction right now is one of the key things that they are craving. So like you said, they've been isolated due to all of the COVID restrictions, and just the kids being in this space together and being able to give, you know, bounce feedback off of each other and share ideas has been huge. And, you know, we as adults, we can tell kids to do something or we can try to guide them, and it may go in one ear and out the other. But when they hear their own gifted or creative peer say something to them, it really resonates with them and sticks with them. So, you know, we're learning skills about how to manage stress. So we talk about, like, how to communicate, assertive communication. We talk about how to set boundaries, which is huge because there's a lot of people pleasing that takes place within this group. And we talk about how to not decrease our goals or the intensity of our goals, because you don't want to tell that to gifted kids. They are all about changing the world. They're all about performing at their best, making straight A's. But we talk about how to still maintain those high goals while balancing it with self-care.
Mm-hmm. And so, as you say, gifted kids, talented kids in particular, are even more vulnerable, right? They're putting a lot of pressure on themselves in addition to pressure they're getting from parents and teachers.
Absolutely. And when you look at the research, when it comes down to them developing a mental health disorder, they're not more prone to that than your general population of kids. However, what you stated about those high expectations, so their stress manifests itself differently, and it does come from this idea that they have to be perfect and that they can't make mistakes. And there's an incredible fear of failure that comes with that. So we talk about how to manage all of that. And, you know, come to the conclusion that it's okay to make mistakes, and mistakes can actually be what leads us to success if we know how to maneuver around them.
You know, we just saw this with Simone Biles, the greatest Olympian perhaps of all time, saying, she just said, I can't keep going. That to me shows what's wrong with our culture, that kids and young adults feel under that much pressure. So while you're offering something that's so needed, what does this say about our culture, that this is where our kids and teens and young adults are?
I loved what you just said, and my mind immediately went to, our society tells us that we have to do something to be valuable. Well, what if we just decided that we were already valuable without having to do anything? Now, yes, of course we can set goals. Yes, of course we can achieve. But I think the thing to know is that sometimes you can get into something called a happiness trap or an achievement trap, where you think that you won't be happy or you won't be valuable until you accomplish something or you do something. And it's a never-ending cycle. So we have to learn to really appreciate the journey and know that we are valuable and beautiful exactly the way we are while we strive to do great things in this life.
Okay, so with all of that said, how can parents register their kids into this month's program?
Absolutely. So parents can go to the website, www.positivedevelopmentllc.com, and right now we are having a 70% off flash sale. So if they register quickly enough, they will get 70% off the 9-week online coaching program.
Nice. Check it out at positivedevelopmentllc.com. It's called Balanced Intensity. And the promo code?
The promo code is positive, all lowercase.
Positive. And she's very positive. Erica Whitfield, licensed mental health counselor. Check out this program for your child. And best wishes for the school year, Erica.
Thank you.
Right now, we want to talk about the value of public art to a city. You might have heard that's been a big focus in Jacksonville lately as a whole array of different groups work on developing the downtown riverfront. A Chicago design firm recently won a competition to redo the site of the former Jacksonville Landing, and the big piece, the big focal point of their design, this huge steel sculpture of public art that they want to place on the North Bank. Well, it's drawn some polarizing opinions. Some people think it spells out Jacksonville. Some people see the word lerp or derp. A lot of social media memes about this. We're going to speak right now with Brooklyn-based artist Bahar Behbahani. He's been very involved in this public art world for a while, and I'm pleased to get his expertise. Bahar, good morning.
Good morning, Manisa.
So good to talk to you, to get your expertise. Can I begin by asking you, have you followed this whole debate in Jacksonville over this public art piece that's planned for our North Bank Riverwalk?
Thanks for calling me expertise. I'm not really like calling myself that. Uh-huh. I'm just like a learner in the process, and I believe in that. A little bit, because I'm actually very interested in the subject of rivers in general, and I think rivers are something that it's vital for all of us, but but we also just like consuming it as like a beautiful thing, and we sometimes forget that they have other problems and issues. So I've done just some work around the rivers in the world and in the U.S. So I'm a little bit familiar with Jacksonville and waterfront projects too. And it's interesting to see, like, it's always like some debate. Some people are positive about changes. Some people are just, you know, have got some agenda. So it's just really a complex subject. And I think it's time to just think about like more intersectional approach and more holistic approach. So I believe like when we say like one like organization or one real estate or business people or like the city, they just decided so and so, it's not enough. We have to push more for intersectional approach and bringing all these people together to hear more voices of the public and the people of the policy making and the business people, and of course from the economy aspects of it, but also we shouldn't forget the ecological aspects, you know, other aspects, the spiritual aspects of it. That's very important,
yeah.
I think.
What are some examples in other locales that you've seen or been involved with where that has all come together in the right way, you know, places we could learn from in Jacksonville as we go about this process?
Yeah, I mean, I can just talk a little bit about New York because I live here and I work a little bit here. And I think, I mean, it's not like, of course, enough anywhere. We haven't like got to the point that we really see like all these disciplines come together. And that's the problem of the modern society in general, and more specifically in the West, that everything, the good thing is everything is got like so like individual in terms of like expertise and like technology-wise, specialties. Like there are like some people that they're super specialists about like one thing. And I think that like singularity and individuality just overall is not good for that holistic approach that I'm mentioning. So we have to just set back a little bit our expertise and our these individual, you know, specialities and come together all these and compromise a little bit and be vulnerable and listen to each other more. And I think we're thriving much more with bringing like scientists, researchers, thinkers, biologists, doctors, NGO peoples, artists, and people. When they all come together, when we make a gem out of it, you know, because it reflects more. It reflects on more issues and more voices and more stories. But one example that I think it's successful in New York is the Department of Cultural Affairs in New York that has an artist in residence, for example. And that's a good example because, you know, we can just reimagining together with different aspects of things. Mm.
Okay, so here's the issue where I'm sitting in downtown Jacksonville. I think most people agree with you that public art has value and bringing all these voices to the table is important, and that public art can be a driver of community, of spirituality, of economic development. The problem that's happening right now, though, in Jacksonville is this incredible polarization over this piece of public art that is slated to be built in our downtown area. People don't like the design. People think it will cost too much. Nobody's on the same page about this. And it's become so controversial that they might not even do it now. We'll have to see what happens with it.
I totally hear you.
And it's so it's public art is polarizing, is what we've observed.
I think it's in other things, like, you know, especially after COVID, we have to just redefine many things. So what is public, actually? where art is consumed and for who. Who is the public? Like, all this has to be redefined after, you know, many things that we went through, the virus that we went through, the political aspects of, you know, the Black Lives Matter, like many things happened that we really need to just go back and just redefine these things. And I think it's sometimes we have public art as a piece of art that we just commission one artist or a team that they make something and it erects in the city. It's beautification. It's got some meanings too. And people come around it and enjoy it, that's fine. But I think when it comes to something like that we call it public intervention, social engagement, we're talking about like an area. We're talking about a downtown Jacksonville that it to me, it's just like makes sense if that's not just about one piece of art, but it's about the process of that. I mean, I'm a big fan of the process of things, not necessarily the output of it, because I believe if the process is democratic enough, is inclusive enough, and it's vital and engaging with the public in a very genuine way, not just in, you know, just the conventional, like making some surveys that what public wants, like genuinely going through some time, intimacy, trust, workshops, and mutual understanding and conversation that what is needed for all. And when we talk about like all, that's also like a big question mark, I guess, these days, because how many people we get involved, you know, people of color, we are living in the aging society, how much we really use our elderly wisdom, how much we are in touch with them, you know, how much we are just standing on the shoulder of ancestral wisdom, how many of LGBTQ people and the community, they just have a voice on that area, and just the public art that we call it, like just one piece there. Have we thought about like the disability and disabled people as part of the aesthetic tone of the place, and also the solution and accessibility. You know, that it's just very complex, and I think it's so beautiful if we bring like all these in the picture and find a way that, for example, a team of artists or an artist can be catalyst or like a glue or like making like this gap, you know, together, to bring all these voices together, to be a voice for marginalized voices, for untold stories.
Lots to
consider. It's all about like the storytelling.
Lots to consider. We'll have to leave it there. And I want to thank you. We'll follow along with this process in Jacksonville. She's Brooklyn-based artist Bahar Behbahani. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
In a moment, how Elevate Jacksonville is helping kids with high poverty but high potential. That's next.
St. Johns County Cultural Events Division presents Sing Out Loud Festival in St. Augustine, September 10th through 26th. Over 100 performances, including TLC, Parquet Courts, Yola, Patty Griffin, and Mayday Parade. Info at singoutloudfestival.com. Orlando International Airport and Emirates, connecting to Dubai and other worldwide destinations. With a choice of 4 weekly flights, guests can enjoy peace of mind with enhanced safety measures and flexible booking options. Details at emirates.com.
On the next Fresh Air, collaborating with Stephen Sondheim on 3 musicals, we talk with James Lapine. He wrote the book for the shows Sunday in the Park with George, Into the Woods, and Passion, and directed the original Broadway productions. His new book is a behind-the-scenes look at the creation of Sunday in the Park. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Jane Clayson. Black women earn just 62 cents for every dollar a white man makes, a pay gap that adds up to a wealth gap.
At the end of their lives, they are sometimes left with very meager savings or no savings at all. So they are shortchanged into retirement.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
Shein has become the most popular shopping app in America. This Chinese e-commerce giant has its own production chain and makes its clothes overseas. Its low prices attract millions. But who's really paying for your clothes? We'll take a closer look at this multi-billion dollar enigma that's upending and upsetting many in the fashion industry. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. It's an expanding program in Jacksonville's Raines and Rebald High Schools, helping kids with high poverty but high potential. For more, I spoke with John Heyman, CEO of Elevate Jacksonville.
Let's take a moment to shine a light on your organization, Elevate Jacksonville, and its role in teaching students here in this school district. Tell us about Elevate Jacks.
Well, Elevate Jacksonville is a unique program that deliberately and intentionally hires teachers. They belong to Elevate, not the school system. And they teach a very unique curriculum based on 13 character qualities and life skills. It is fully approved by the Florida Department of Education. It's an elective credit that the high school students earn, so it's not a waste of their time to be in our classroom.
And this is, this is different from, say, Teach for America or City Year, right? Other programs that are in our public, have been in our public schools.
Yeah, that's a great question. Those are good organizations, by the way. I actually helped advise when they were created. I think the world of them. But we're very different. In fact, no one else is doing this in Jacksonville. Otherwise, I wouldn't have started yet another nonprofit. Mm-hmm. Well, Teach for America, as you guys know, teach classes, one of the four core classes. That would be English, history, science, and math. We don't teach any of those four. We teach an elective. So the students are placed in our classroom by the guidance counselors because the guidance counselors believe that this would help the students. In fact, Dr. Bostic and Mr. Hall, the principals of Jean Ribault High School and Raines High School, believe that without this, the kids might graduate, but they're not going to make it. So we are very different than those other organizations.
And is this because you're teaching skills that are so important to success in life, but that aren't necessarily strict academic curriculum? You're talking character and life skills. So what are some examples of that in this curriculum?
Yeah, well, the first part of your question is spot on. That is why we're different. There are other character ed programs out there in the world, but none deliberately and intentionally hire full-time teachers that teach those character qualities in the school as an elective. They usually are an add-on to the English teacher or the social studies teacher. Nothing wrong with that, but we are very different than that. And so, yeah, we want the students to graduate high school. Everybody does. But we want them to graduate with qualities that are going to help them get into college, military, trade school, and just be contributing, you know, to the community. Some of the character qualities are caring, courage. The root word for courage is rage. You know, how do you control the anger issues? Integrity, leadership, respect. And then some of the life skills are having a career-mindedness. And that may sound simple to a lot of people, but these students don't have that. Mm. Sometimes they are thinking about their future no further than the next next weekend. We had one student tell us he hopes to live to be 21. I mean, more students feel that, but verbally in front of the other students, when we asked what were their goals, goal setting is one of the life skills, problem solving, things like that, decision making.
Wow.
So
I think this gives people listening a sense of how different high school can be for some kids in this city. if all they're thinking about is surviving to age 21.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, John, you're teaching it at Raines and Rebalt. Why in high schools as opposed to pre-K, kindergarten, and the early learning years?
Well, those are important. When I was the CEO of the Jacksonville Children's Commission, you may recall, we funded all those levels, both the early learning, which of course was the focus of many mayors, including the one we have now. I used to tell Mayor John Payton, it's never too early and it's never too late to reach a child. And apparently he loved both those ideas, and he became a mentor of a seventh grader along with me. And we have followed that child all the way up through military. He's now married. And so it's never too early and it's never too late. But most of the focus in recent years has been on early learning. Nothing wrong with that. That's fantastic if you can start to build the foundation that early. But I also believe, and I know that some of the nonprofits work exclusively with high school students because they also believe it's never too late to reach a child. There's some theories that float out there. It's usually proposed by people of early learning that once they pass a certain grade, it's too late. I don't believe that. In fact, I know it's not true. And the other nonprofits that do work with high school students don't believe it either. Otherwise, we're wasting our time and money with these high schoolers. But we are seeing, I mean, we've only been in operation for 2 years. We're seeing amazing results with these kids. 100% have been promoted. 100%, and we're not creaming the top of the student population. You know, the guidance counselors give us students that are in the bottom half. In fact, I often refer to it as the top half of the bottom half of the student population. Now, the guidance counselors can refer who they want, but they are not giving us the top half of the student population. But they are giving us, I call these students high poverty, high promise urban students.
So check it out, everyone. An independent effort to teach high-poverty, high-promise kids, as John says, character and life skills at Raines and Rebalt High Schools. Donate and learn more at elevatejacksonville.org. He's Executive Director John Heyman. Going to be very busy as classes start again here soon.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, John, and keep in touch.
Thank you, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks also to producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, associate producer Catherine Hobbs, along with editorial director Jessica Palumbo and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. I'm Melissa Ross. Make sure to catch our podcast up later today, wherever you like to listen. And we'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Mask up and get that vaccine.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.